This is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News.
It is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. A very happy Easter Sunday if you observe the holiday today. My name is Adam Roberts. Normally you hear me sometimes on Wisconsin's Morning News helping out Vinny and Eric in the mornings, but today filling in for Libby. Though don't worry, we will be hearing from Libby later on in the show today. We'll preview all that in just a minute. Jessica Gatza, working in the WTMJ newsroom. This is sort of a out-of-body experience for me. I'm usually the one in your position in the chair when Libby is hosting, so this is quite the sight to see. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and it is, of course, Easter Sunday, and I know that spring has technically been in motion since March 19th. It was a little early, I think, this year. But for many, so for some people, the first sign that spring has arrived is Easter Sunday. I'm curious to know what that is for you. Is it flowers? Is it maybe something that happens in your regular routine?
It's definitely paying attention to the plants and animals. Mm-hmm. Specifically, this it's become robins for me when the
sure.
robins return.
I noticed that they were out, and granted, we had a very warm winter, so everyone's body clock, internal clock's probably a little wonky this year, but they were out really early this year.
Yeah, for sure. At least a couple weeks ago already, and we have this bird feeder contraption at my house, and they've already been back and like kind of fighting with the other little birds, scattering them away.
I remember Brian Nesnansky, Storm Team 4 meteorologist, he has had some issues with robins flying into his window the last couple of years. I'm curious to know the update on that saga. Maybe we'll hear from him on Wisconsin's Afternoon News sometime this week. For me, I think it's the daffodils. I've always associated the blooming of daffodils with the start of spring. Again, a little early this year, so some of them are already sadly starting to show their wilt. We also got that cold stretch a little while ago. I mean, we're kind of in one right now, so not great for the daffodils. Crocuses also are something I keep an eye on. Do you have any of those?
Tulips are, I don't have any of those anymore, but all the bulbs seem to be the very signs of spring.
I'm waiting for tulips. I also love the variety of tulips. Hey, if you're listening and you have something that kind of resonates with you, you know, what is the official start of spring in your mind? Let us know. WTMJ talk and text line is 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. I'm curious to know what that is for you. I know not everybody observes Easter Sunday. It's not a holiday for everybody, but it is for many here in Southeast Wisconsin. So whether you're getting ready for Sunday services this morning, if you're cooking some ham, whatever you're up to on the Sunday, we're glad to have you along here on Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. Hey, coming up, Mark Cass, editor of the Milwaukee Business Journal, he decided to break a little bit of news of his own. I alluded to the fact that we will be hearing from Libby Collins a little bit on the show today, and she sat down with Mark to talk about the big news that he broke on his new job transition coming up soon. So we'll hear from Libby and Mark coming up a little bit later on this hour. Also, of course, we have a very interesting scenario playing out with Top Chef right now, one of the biggest food shows in the world, and it's playing out right here in Southeast Wisconsin. So we'll hear from On Milwaukee's Matt Miller talking about that. You heard Jessica mention in the top of the hour news the latest on the Baltimore Bridge scenario and how that cleanup and recovery continues to play out there. And is it a symptom of a bigger issue going on in the United States? There was another incident involving a boat and a bridge, and it occurred yesterday afternoon. And also, there's a little bit of a local tie into this as well. We'll have that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Also today, we'll be hearing from TMJ4 reporter Ryan Jenkins. He's following a very interesting story that played out after the WWE SmackDown event at Fiserv Forum, which was in Milwaukee a couple of weeks ago. Now, I myself, big wrestling guy, and I was really upset that I couldn't get to the show because I've been to the ones that have come through Milwaukee previously. Unfortunately, for someone from Appleton, a very scary scenario playing out after the fact on that evening. So Ryan has been following that story. He's going to give us a little bit of a feel for what's coming up next in that story that you want to make sure that you're listening to. Already got one in from the 262. They put Easter egg window stickers on the window. Stops birds from hitting the glass. Thank you, Lynn in Waukesha. And Niz, I hope you're listening because I do the same thing. We would put stickums up on our windows as well. Unfortunately, the problem with those is it's really easy to put them on and very difficult to get them off after the fact. We used to use the gels for various holidays. And unfortunately, when you put ones up for the 4th of July, and then it's 90 degrees, it's very hard to get the stickums off of the window. But thank you, Lynn and Niz. Again, I hope you're listening for that wonderful tip. It is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. My name is Adam Roberts, filling in for Libby Collins today. You heard from Jessica Gatzow. She is working away in the WTMJ Breaking News Center. And Charlie, filling in on for Isaac this weekend, producing the show for us today. It is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. I'm Adam Roberts, filling in for Libby Collins today. Milwaukee Business Journal Editor-in-Chief Mark Cass making some news of his own this week.
He's been named Senior Vice President and Chief Content Officer.
You like that? That's a pretty long title.
That's a
title,
big
John.
Title. Now,
I need a shirt that has it on there, don't you think?
Maybe we can make that shirt for our guy, Mark. Normally joining us every Sunday morning at 8:20, sitting down with Libby Collins to break down the big news.
Say it isn't so. Mark Cass made the news this week instead of covering it. And Mark, I have to ask you, why did you make the decision now? And what's the deal? How did you decide to go to the Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame and Team Lammy?
You know, Libby, it's been something I've been thinking about for a while. I've been at the paper now for 28 years. I've been editor for over 20 years. And I'm at a point in my life where I just decided I could stay at the paper and I love my job. I really love what I do. Or I could try something new and always love sports. As you know, as I talk about sports a lot, I just love sports and just had the opportunity here to work in sports, to work on Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame, which is an institution in our community, which is kind of well known, but not really well known enough and needs a higher profile. It just has some incredible athletes involved with it. So to really raise that and really the chance to work with Brian Lammy and his companies on sports things throughout our community and throughout the country. I mean, he does a lot of work, as you know, with Donald Driver, with other players, and has events all over the country. And it just is an opportunity for me to try something new, to really expand what I do, use what I've learned at the Business Journal, use all the connections I have in the community to really try and have some fun. I'm at a point in life, Libby, where I always want to have fun, but really want to have some change and have some fun. And I'll still be available to talk to you. You know that. I'll always want to talk to Libby about something, whether it's sports, whether it's maybe a show on cooking that you want to talk about, whatever you want. You can always call me.
But here's the thing I'm wondering about. And I don't know if anybody's asked you this, Mark. Let's face it, you're not 30 years old. And making this kind of a change at this stage, how is that affecting you personally?
I mean, it was tough. It's one of those things where I've been going to the same office for 27 years, on and off for 6 years I left, but then came back with 20 years as editor. I've been involved with the paper. It was a very hard choice. But on the other hand, as someone said to me, opportunities only come around once. And this opportunity was handed to me. I didn't seek it out. I mean, it's just a chance to work for somebody who I really respect and admire. And also, I've seen a lot of things happen over the past number of years, whether it's friends who've had illnesses, friends who've unfortunately passed. And you're like, okay, who knows when our time on this earth is over? I mean, sometimes a risk is okay. And I know this is a bit of a risk, but I don't think it's a tough risk because I always count on myself and I know where I'm going. And I know, kind of worst case, I can always call you. And, you know, I figure you'll let me hide out in the studio or come on the air once or twice a year. But, you know, I'm going to be good. I feel very good about what I'm doing. And I got so much support from my family, so much support from my friends that it's been an incredible week for me. And I've heard from ex-reporters, editors who work with me. I've heard from friends throughout the country. It's been an amazing week for me.
Well, we're excited for you, too. But you know what else we're excited for is Top Chef. We have the second episode.
See, I knew we couldn't go we couldn't go 6 minutes or 5 minutes without talking about Top Chef.
All right. So far, what's been the impact on restaurants that have been featured?
Yeah, already good. I was at Loopy and Iris earlier this week, and I was speaking with Adam Siegel, who was on the first episode, remember the judge? And he told me his reservations have spiked. He told me the evening we were there, he had a couple in from Chicago who saw his restaurant on the show and actually drove up to eat at his restaurant. So that's the kind of impact it has. It's going to have long-term impact. He's going to get reservations who saw him on the show, who saw his restaurant on the show. And you saw it this week. I mean, it showed the Miller Capes. How cool was that to see this event space that we have in our city that I don't think a lot of people know about and to have that there. Now, in future weeks, you'll see AmFam Field. You'll see other restaurants throughout the region just highlighting that. And I just think what I've already heard from others across the country that I've talked to about this is, wow, I didn't know that you guys had such great restaurants in Milwaukee. So that's the thing you're seeing. And I also think the cool thing about this show is it's not 1 week. It's not 3 days like the RNC, 3 or 4 days like the RNC. It's 14 weeks, right? So people are going to be seeing Milwaukee for a long time to come. So I think the impact is going to be really, really strong.
Listen, that's going to be like on a constant rotation in my...
How cool was it to see all the Riverwalk shots and the arena shots and American Family Field shots? And even when they're just driving on the freeway. And they showed that next week they'd be doing something on cheese. And they showed the farm where it's going to be at, which I know is in the area. Think about how cool that is.
It really is. I want to talk about a couple other big stories this week. And that's the one where Northwestern Mutual is going to buy that university club in downtown Milwaukee.
Right.
Why are they doing it? And what do you think they're going to do with the building?
Very interesting move. Probably shouldn't have been a surprise, though, because they're right next door. They obviously have a significant investment with their corporate headquarters, their north building right there, which they're currently renovating, spending $500 million. So it shouldn't have been a surprise. They just want to protect their neighborhood, just make sure they can control it, a good investment for them. I think what they're saying now is the uses to come, but what we've already seen from city stuff that's been submitted is that it's likely to be housing, probably most likely apartments. I think you'll see some event space there. To me, it's just a great location, overlooking the lake there, kind of on the bluff, overlooking the art museum. I think very important spot in the city, so I'm really glad to see this. Glad to see NML step up again and really invest here. So I think you'll see a very nice project. Come on now. You know we need more apartments in downtown, right? We don't have any of those being built.
That's funny. Let's talk about another kind of surprise this week, and that's at that downtown bar, Victor's. Everybody knows that was put on the sale block. Do you think they're going to keep it open, or do you think they'll redevelop that site?
Yeah, this has been one of the most highly read stories of the year for us. Everyone's talking about it, because as I've talked to people throughout the past week, everyone has a Victor's store, right? We've all went there. It's an iconic spot in the city. Everybody knows where it is. Everybody's gone there. It's cool. It's going to be interesting. This is one where it's up for sale, but it is still open. I mean, that's important to point out. The hope for the family members there is that it will be bought by one of them and hopefully long-term will stay open. On the other hand, think about all the residential projects that have happened. It's right across the street from Nova, which is a couple hundred new apartment complex. There's other new things in the area. So it could easily have an offer made and end up the apartment. To me, though, Victor's is an institution in Milwaukee. And the stories that I've heard, it's just, it's one of those places that you kind of think back on and say, wow, it has been part of our history.
Well, let's talk about another part of our history, and that is that Milwaukee unofficial official holiday, which takes place
day.
Tuesday.
Yes.
It's opening day with the Brewers.
I heard you're already in line for a spot out there, aren't you? You're already sitting on the freeway or on Blue Mountain ready to get in. So that you can throw out the first tailgate party, right?
Well, listen, I've been there for opening day before, and it is so exciting. What's the attendance outlook for the Brewers this season?
Yeah, it's just going to be interesting to watch. They've had a slow start, I think, just because of some uncertainty about the team in terms of a lot of new players. Things have changed with the team, so a little bit of uncertainty, but it's all about winning, right? So over the past number of years, the Brewers have been in the playoffs, which is great for the team, great for the community. Always draws well. So I think there's optimism. I think it's all about winning. If they win in April and May, I think the Brewers will draw very well. They, over the years, have drawn over 3 million people, which is really out-hitting what we should do for our community. You know, we are the smallest city in the major leagues, but the Brewers often rank 12, 13, 14 in terms of overall attendance. So the Brewers do very well at the gate. The key is, as I just said, it's about winning. If they're winning in April, May, and June, I think the Brewers are going to draw very well. And they've also added things at the stadium. You know, for those of you who saw it this week, they've added a scoreboard that's the size of, I don't even know what the size is. It's one of the largest scoreboards in the country. They've added new food out there from the market hall, having some new restaurants out there. So they're trying to really kind of enhance the experience. So I think attendance will be good. But again, it's about how they play on the field if they're in the running to make the playoffs at the end of the season.
See you at the ballpark, Mark. Thanks for reading.
You'll be out there this week with a hot dog and a beer, right?
Make it a brat. All right, Mark. You have a great week. Thank you.
All right, Libby. Talk to you soon.
Libby talking with Milwaukee Business Journal Editor-in-Chief Mark Cass. It is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. Adam Roberts filling in for Libby. It's 8:36 on WTMJ. It's Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. A catastrophic collapse in Baltimore. Debate continuing over a major Milwaukee referendum. Raining on the parade in New York and more. It's the Week in Review, and it's brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go back.
Heads up from Milwaukee Mitchell International Airport. The parking lots are jammed.
Try to understand.
We are at capacity!
Today's the deadline for Donald Trump to put up the full amount of the judgment in a bond so he can pursue his appeal.
I respect the appellate division for substantially reducing that ridiculous amount of money that was put on by a corrupt judge.
Given that that's the reality now, it's reduced to $175, does that do anything to timeline? Are we still going through a normal timeline?
If this were in Wisconsin, that appeal would take 6 to 9 months.
Good one.
Three Milwaukee police officers on leave after shooting a man on the city's north side near 64th and Sheridan.
No officers or other community members were injured. The suspect's firearm was recovered on scene.
It's kind of like a thing around here, which is...
I need one of you guys on the south side, one of you guys on the north side. Hold all traffic on the Key Bridge.
Everybody, the whole bridge just collapsed.
There are unknown amounts of people and or vehicles in the water.
Rescue operation still underway this morning. A major bridge collapsed in Baltimore.
Our first unit arrived on scene and reported a complete collapse of the Key Bridge.
This morning, our state is in shock.
Our prayers are with everyone involved in this terrible accident.
Authorities recovering two bodies from the river and searching for four people still missing.
The impact to this community is forever. I mean, it's going to be forever.
The Milwaukee County Medical Examiner's Office releasing the official cause of the death for Jolene Waldruff.
Coroner Joseph Calderaro reports that Waldruff died from hypertensive and atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease with obesity as a contributing factor.
Longtime editor-in-chief of the Milwaukee Business Journal, Mark Cass, is leaving the organization to join Milwaukee sports media firm Team Lamy.
He has been named Senior Vice President and Chief Content Officer.
You like that? That's a very long title.
That's a big title.
I need a shirt that has it on it, don't you think?
I love being involved in the community, but I kind of looked at it and said, you know what? I have one more act.
I got one more in me.
So we're looking at the live cameras for the Falcons, and I was just looking at, there's one right now, the Oak Creek Power Plant. There's a Falcon on top of some eggs, and the Falcon looks like he's dead. Because I was just sitting there like, da-dum, 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 da-dum. And so then I scrolled down to the Valley Power Plant, and I said, Julia, come over here and look at this. It looks like this Falcon's hardly moving. As you walked over here, the Falcon got up.
It could feel my vibes, right?
It did.
I felt a great disturbance in the force.
Debate continues over a $252 million MPS referendum on the ballot this April.
This week, the Greater Milwaukee Committee publicly voiced their opposition to the measure, citing an unclear plan for the funds. GMC President Joel Brennan.
This will allow us to maintain the status quo for the next several years. That shouldn't be acceptable to any of us.
MPS Superintendent Dr. Keith Posley tells Wisconsin's Midday News there is a plan for the $252 million.
These dollars will be used to defray the cost of smaller class sizes, art, music, physical education, library media specialists.
Former MPS Superintendent Bill Andrikopoulos tells WTMJ that unanswered questions remain about the MPS budget.
I have an issue after recently with the budget director coming out and saying that the deficit isn't that high.
Former Senator and Vice Presidential nominee Joe Lieberman has passed away.
Now is not the time to settle for less than we can be. Thank you. God bless you.
Getting a chance at the American dream of home ownership in Washington County. County Executive Josh Shulman explaining to WTMJ.
We want to be welcoming, whether it's coming on up to Cracker Barrel.
Was that a subtle jab, the Cracker Barrel thing, Josh?
No. That's just the first place off the interstate. Okay. I mean, it's just a logical first stop, right?
There is more than just Cracker Barrel.
Take care now.
Thursday, that is when the Brewers open the regular season.
Hold up.
Couldn't we wait until like 10, 11 o'clock?
No. They made the absolute right call.
Roof on it.
What a week.
Da-dum, 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 da-dum.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
That's the Week in Review. It's brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited. It is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News, and for many today, it is Easter Sunday. The sweet tooth that so many have on these Easter celebrations could be burning a hole in the pocket for a lot of Americans this year.
Americans are expected to buy a whole lot of chocolate, bunnies, and jelly beans for their Easter baskets this year. The National Retail Federation predicts holiday spending of $22.4 billion, second only to last year, which hit a record of $24 billion. The survey predicts around 4 out of 5 Americans will celebrate the holiday. They'll spend an average of $177 a person. Most of that will be on food, followed by clothing and gifts. Spending on candy alone is expected to top $3 billion. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
See, that's why you should be like me, think smarter, not harder. Producer Charlie, as well as one of our other WTMJ producers, Samantha Butson, they went out and got Easter candy for the studio very late for Wisconsin's afternoon news. And as happens in the newsroom, the weekend team reaps the benefits of the weekday team's hard work. There's some jelly beans and some chocolates in there. So no spending. I will not contribute to the $3 billion spent on candy this year. Thank you, Wendy, from CBS News. great bumps today, Charlie. Very appreciative of it. It is 8:50 on WTMJ, Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. If you have been listening to WTMJ at all for the last couple of weeks, whether it's Wisconsin's Morning News, any of our daily weekday shows, What's on Tap, anything on the weekend, we have referenced Top Chef a lot over the last couple weeks, and why not? It's continuing its run on Bravo, been highlighting the best of the culinary world in Milwaukee and across Wisconsin. I can attest the crowd at Dan Dan has been very appreciative, Dan Jacobs. Of course, on the show and the crowds the other night, I was telling Vince and Wisconsin's Morning News this week. I was at Dan Dan, took my fiance out for a meal last week, Friday. The joint was jumping. It was absolutely packed, but the team very much capable of handling the crowds that come out once your show is featured on Top Chef. Libby Collins talking with On Milwaukee's Matt Miller about that and more.
Matt, I know you were at the watch party once again this week for Top Chef, and what's your takeaway?
I thought that was a really good episode of Top Chef. The first episode was a little weird. There wasn't a quick fire. It was kind of, you know, they had a lot of new people to introduce and the new host introduced. This felt like a proper episode of Top Chef, and I really liked it. And I thought they did a good job of doing a beer episode without it being like a totally stereotypical Wisconsin beer episode. I thought doing hops for the Quickfire Challenge was kind of a clever way to do beer without doing beer. And obviously you're going to do Miller when you're doing a beer challenge here in Milwaukee, but I like that they took place in the Miller Caves, and we kind of, if you're someone like me who hasn't been able to see that part of Milwaukee yet, it was kind of a cool way to, you know, spotlight a part of Milwaukee that many of us haven't seen. Weirdly, my biggest issue with the production of the show happened at Judge's Table. I don't know why they brought both teams out to announce the winner and the loser, and then had the losing team or the winning team just kind of awkwardly standing off to the side. Normally that's what the stew room is for, and that's where you also get a lot of the drama and a lot of like the villainy behavior, is you have these like chefs stuck in this tiny room and like thinking about their lives, thinking about their choices, and that's when people start getting a little snippy and start like, you know, building some animosity towards each other. And instead they kind of had that weird setup. I am interested, this was a team challenge, and normally this is when, you know, the villain pops out. This is when, you know, somebody tries to take control of the team or doesn't agree with something or totally steamrolls somebody's plans or throws somebody under the bus at the judges' table. And instead, everyone was super nice and super into, like, being on a team. So I'm kind of interested to see if at any point we will get that classic reality show villainy this season.
Sounds like you're looking forward to that.
You know, you want some characters. You know, I honestly, the biggest character, the biggest personality so far this season beyond Hat Guy, and we do not speak of Hat Guy anymore, was Dan. And Dan speaking about his Kennedy's disease and how that kind of makes it difficult for him to kind of have the full range of motion and muscle use that the rest of his chefs do have. And I'll be interested to see how that plays out for the rest of the season as well.
You know, that's a good question, because I was thinking the same thing, is how will viewers react to him with that? Is that going to make him more sympathetic to the audience?
I think so. What will be interesting is how the other chefs respond to this, because, I mean, I remember season 6, the Las Vegas season of Top Chef, when there was Robin, who was a cancer survivor, who talked about surviving cancer to the judges, and one of her fellow chefs, Eli, started like being really critical of that, started being like, oh, like you're just using that to kind of get ahead and use sympathy. And it was really kind of cold and heartless on that chef. But I'm interested to see if maybe, you know, depending on how things go, you know, if people start holding that against Dan. And Dan talked about how it was like, I don't want to bring this up really if I can. Like, I don't want to make this a thing because I don't want people to look at me differently. Or maybe he too watched season 6 of Top Chef and was like, I don't want people to be like, oh, you're just using that to be a sympathetic and stuff like that.
Interesting perception on that. And again, where are you doing these watch parties for Top Chef?
Every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, we are at Zocalo in Walker's Point. There's drink deals. We've got the show on with volume and subtitles. It's a great time. Come out and join us.
All right. So the other thing, big, it's really the only opening this Easter weekend, and this is Godzilla versus Kong. But now, correct me if I'm wrong, they are kind of friends in this, and they work together?
Yeah. So the last movie was Godzilla versus Kong.
And now they're buddies. Now it's Godzilla and Kong.
It's a buddy movie.
It's a buddy movie. It's like Lethal Weapon, but with a giant lizard and a giant monkey. And I'll be honest with you, it's going to be kind of hard for this movie because we had such a tremendous Godzilla movie come out last winter with Godzilla Minus One, the Oscar-winning Godzilla Minus One, that it's going to kind of be hard for this one to be like, oh, you know, we're just making a dumb, fun Godzilla movie. And it's like, no, but we had the good, fun Godzilla movie come out just recently. So I'll be interested to see if the audiences are really interested in this one or if they're going to be like, no, give me more of that Japanese version of this story.
I saw one little bit where apparently Kong has some sort of an arm weapon that they put on him. I don't know.
Apparently he's
like
got
an
like
Iron
a
Man
power
thing
glove.
Or something.
Yeah. I don't know, because apparently being a giant ape wasn't enough. Now he apparently has a power glove. I don't know. And Godzilla is pink, I guess. And they're weirdly hiding from the audiences who they're fighting, because half the fun of these kind of monster movies is, you know, oh, who's the big bad that they got to go up against? And in this movie, they're kind of being coy about, like, I don't know, might be other monkeys, might be another Godzilla. And I'm just like, no, tell me on that, you know? I don't know. I'm not sure about this.
All right. Finally, Matt, of course, the Brewers started playing this past week, but they're finally coming home for their home opener on Tuesday. And to celebrate that, I know you have some baseball-themed movies you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, I have a list of the five best baseball movies on Milwaukee.com. And if you want to watch some baseball movies, Bull Durham, in my opinion, the greatest baseball movie ever made, that is available on Amazon Prime, so you can watch that there. And Major League, which we obviously have a tight bond to here since they filmed a decent part of it here in Milwaukee, that's available on Max. So two of the best baseball movies ever made. You should definitely check those out. I believe Moneyball is on Netflix, which I think Moneyball is a pretty underrated baseball movie from recent years. I really like that movie. There's a lot of really good baseball movies. We have been blessed with a lot of good baseball movies. The Sandlot is out there. Check them out.
Don't forget Field of Dreams and The Natural.
Field of Dreams and The Natural. Of course, again, there are so many good baseball movies. I could do another top five baseball movies list in addition to the five I've already done. It's really good. As opposed to, like, football, which there's not a ton of great football movies if you really think about it. I'm trying to think of, like, the best one. I don't know. Rudy? Ugh.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're into baseball season. Matt, as always, it is great to have you here. We will follow you and check out all of your reviews at onmilwaukee.com. And also, we'll check into that Top Chef viewing party this week.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks for having me.
On Milwaukee's Matt Miller. We'll agree to disagree on the lack of good football movies, but that's just that you're a critic. That's your opinion, and you are entitled to it.
This is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News.
It is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. Adam Roberts filling in for Debbie Lozaga. We'll hear from her in just a minute. Filling in for Libby Collins, who you have heard a couple of times already on the show today. Charlie's producing the show for us, and Jessica Guess, that was in the WTMJ Breaking Newsroom this morning. Jessica, do you have any pets at home?
I do. I have a Labradoodle.
What's the Labradoodle's
name? Her name is Honey.
Aw, that's very nice. I have a Corgi myself. Her name is Nico, and I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, but when it comes to pets, you do just about anything for your pet, would you say?
Oh, of course.
I'm absolutely in that camp as well, and that includes supplying our pets with the things they need every single day. A lot of times, people, for various reasons, who have animals, and when you have especially more than one, it can be a struggle sometimes to keep them fed, keep them the toys that they need to be mentally exercised. Well, the Brewers, as we get closer to opening day, they are kicking off their Brewers Community Foundation Pet Charity Toy Drive, and our own WTMJ's Debbie Lozaga has more on what that's going to look like later this week.
We're happy that this year we're going to be kicking off our season with a drive for charity, collecting pet supplies.
Executive Director of the Brewers Community Foundation, Cecilia Gore, says they have a specific goal in mind with all of their charity events throughout the Brewers season.
We focus on health, education, recreation, and basic needs. The Humane Society hits that on a number of levels. As you know, pets are an important part of health for people. They provide recreation. There's some educational benefits related to to the Humane Society and pets in general, so they're a good partner for us.
And the fact that they're looking to the awesome Brewers fans means it's kind of a match made in heaven.
During COVID, I think that it really proved out to be a fact that pets play a really important role in the lives of many, many people, and we have many dog, cat, and other animal lovers in our organization along with our fans, and we thought that that would be a good starting point for us to partner with Wisconsin Humane Society.
So what exactly is needed? Media coordinator for the Wisconsin Humane Society, Stacy Oatman, says there's a big old list, as they're always in need.
Items such as those soft dog treats that they love to have so much, potty pads, peanut butter, unscented baby wipes we use a lot in the shelters, dog toys, any kind of food, and cat litter.
By the way, that peanut butter has a caveat.
Peanut butter sometimes is made with xylitol. It's a sweetener, and that can be very toxic to pets. So you want to watch that on the label. Make sure that your peanut butter doesn't have any of that. Of course, if you do donate peanut butter and you forgot to check the label, that's not a problem. We do have people that go through very carefully and make sure that all the peanut butter is going to be safe for our animals.
And there are some things they can't take, no matter how bad they would like to.
Opened bags of food. We just need to be incredibly safe and use bags that are sealed. And we also wouldn't be able to take some medications. So a lot of people have leftover medications if, unfortunately, an animal passes away or if they just got extra that they don't need anymore. But those are not something that we're going to be able to take for use in the shelter.
Of course, the donation list is pretty long, so if you'd like to check it out yourself, you can visit WTMJ.com and we'll have it posted there. We also have a monetary donation link and QR code if you'd like to help that way.
Our largest expenses are for animal care in the shelters, as well as medications and veterinary expenses. So most of the animals that come through the Wisconsin Humane Society need medical care beyond the standard vaccinations and spay and neuter surgeries. That monetary donation goes very, very far for animals in need.
Here's what we're planning. On Thursday, April 4th, we're having a pet supplies and donation charity drive-through drive. The Wisconsin Humane Society and Brewers Community Foundation will be out at Health Fair Field in the Cooper Lot driveway collecting donated items as well as money. I'll even be out there from 7 a.m. till about noon. So come on out and say hi. Bring your fur babies too so I can say hi to them too. Love me some pet loving. Also, you won't be driving off empty-handed.
The first 250 fans who donate at the drive will receive a Brewers hat and two free tickets to a game, as well as a Pat Murphy and Ricky Weeks commemorative pin.
If you can't make it to the drive-through drive, don't sweat it. They'll be collecting throughout the homestand.
It'll be an in-stadium collection, so if you're coming to the game, you can bring a pet supply and or $10, and you'll also get one of those commemorative pins.
I feel like we can beat last year's numbers. After collecting over $5,600 and five pallets of supplies last year, the bar is set pretty high, but I think we can do it. Come on, Milwaukee and Brewers fans, let's help out the Wisconsin Humane Society and donate. Debbie Lozaga, WTMJ News.
Thank you, Debbie. And again, a reminder that runs through this week. The drive-through pet drive will be at Health Fair Field on April 4th. And also, you're going to want to make sure you check out WTMJ on YouTube tomorrow morning. We're going to be dropping another video on the upcoming pet drive with all the information you're going to need, including some fun that Debbie and our WTMJ social media guru, Dylan Hunter Carter, had with some lovable pets late last week. So you'll want to make sure you're on our WTMJ YouTube page for that tomorrow morning. You can find us on YouTube, or as always, you can check out WTMJ.com. It is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. Adam Roberts filling in for Libby Collins this week. And of course, the dominating national story from the last 7 days, the catastrophic collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. At last check, there were the two construction workers on the bridge who were able to leave. One was in critical condition at last check, one walking away amazingly uninjured. Two bodies have been pulled out. There are still multiple people still assumed missing. And in Baltimore, crews now starting to lift the first pieces of the wreckage from the bridge, while also promising to reopen the port as soon as possible, even if it's at sort of a limited capacity. CBS News' Bradley Blackburn.
The Port of Baltimore is the ninth busiest in the nation, and the cargo it would normally handle is now being rerouted.
That cargo is going to keep moving.
Stephen Edwards with the Virginia Port Authority says East Coast ports are successfully absorbing that extra traffic and limiting economic ripple effects.
I think the economic shock is local. It's not across the region and it's not across the nation.
But thousands of port workers are now waiting.
And Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen, he has an estimate out that replacing the bridge in its entirety could cost more than $1 billion. Of course, President Biden last week saying he's calling on the federal government to fund those repairs. We'll have more on federal funding for bridge repairs in just a moment. But I wanted to bring this up because yesterday afternoon, around 1:30 local time, you may have heard this, another bridge struck by a big boat. Now, this time was not as catastrophic as in Baltimore, but it did happen in Oklahoma. So it's in the city of Salisaw over the Arkansas River. The Highway 59 bridge struck by a river barge as traffic was free-flowing over the bridge. It's the middle of the day, not like with Baltimore where it was at least overnight. This was in prime time for traffic. A Dayton Holland posted a video on Twitter, I guess it's now X, of he and his family nearby capturing the moment of impact.
Holy
Can you feel it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that barge is loose.
So the bridge did stay open initially, then it was closed and has since been inspected. No reports of injuries on the highway or on the barge, and it's still not known what caused that barge to veer off course. Was it a power outage like with the Baltimore collapse, or was it something else? So that's still being investigated. And so the question now becomes, does there need to be a national retcon on bridge infrastructure? Does Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg need to be doing more? So I understand it's maybe a little reactionary to suggest a whole national retcon. But if you forgot, there is a near miss or at least a pretty bad incident also locally as well with our bridges. This one, the Black Hawk Bridge in western Wisconsin. That's the bridge over the Mississippi River that connects southwest Wisconsin with Lansing, Iowa, which has been closed after the bridge literally started moving. KWWL-TV in Iowa.
Officials have temporarily closed the bridge connecting Lansing, Iowa, and Wisconsin because of structural integrity issues. The Black Hawk Bridge on Highway 82 is 100 years old. Officials say they decided to close it after they saw it slightly move. Authorities say the bridge will be closed until crews can fully inspect it to determine if it is safe to travel across.
Yeah, as someone who was living in La Crosse for a decade before I came to Milwaukee, I've been on that bridge plenty of times, as you heard in the newscast there, a 100-year-old bridge, and it's set up very similarly to the way the Francis Scott Key Bridge, with the supports right there in a very fast-moving Mississippi River. Now, as of right now, there's a water taxi that's taking cars back and forth across the river in that site, but you obviously can't do that forever. So what is being done? You may recall that President Biden, among many visits the president has made to the state of Wisconsin the last few months, he was in Superior earlier this year touting a $1 trillion infrastructure plan while looking over a very much in need of repairs bridge in Superior. It's the Blatnik Bridge that connects Superior to Duluth, Minnesota.
There are 979 bridges in Wisconsin, 661 bridges in Minnesota in poor condition, along with nearly 7,000 miles of highway between your two states that need repair.
So clearly more has to be done, and I understand that freeway expansion and that freeway construction obviously will take precedence at times, but we cannot forget our bridges. I believe we had in the news earlier this week, there are hundreds in Wisconsin alone that a national survey conducted found are in need of major repairs. So something to definitely not overlook as we decide what to do with our federal construction funds. And again, $1 trillion being touted by the president. We will see how much of that may be used to fund the repairs in Baltimore and other repairs across the country. It's 9:34 on WTMJ. Adam Roberts filling in for Libby Collins this weekend. It is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. Just seems every now and then we get one more of these big data breaches, and this time it's impacting AT&T, the giant, revealing that social security numbers and email addresses from 73 million accounts, whoops-a-daisy, appear to have been leaked onto the dark web, criminals buy and sell stolen personal information.
The Washington Post reports the data set was released onto the dark web about 2 weeks ago and appears to contain information from 2019 or earlier. In addition to Social Security numbers and email addresses, it may have included phone numbers, full names, dates of birth, and mailing addresses. AT&T says it has reset the passcodes of 7.6 million current customers. The other 65.4 million people are former customers. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
AT&T says it's investigating the leak, does not yet know if it came from inside the company or if it was from one of its vendors. Company saying it will pay for credit monitoring for the affected customers, again, to the tune of $73 million. I know usually on this program we hear from the Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection's Michelle Reinen. Not with us this week, but another reminder, keep your information close and your Social Security numbers closer. I'm not someone who thinks that, oh, I'm just throwing my information out on the web for anyone to see. But, I mean, if you're on Amazon, if you're on any of these, like, online streaming services and you have to input your information, anytime you fill out any sort of an application, that information's going out there. And we all know about how data gets sold and traded on the web all the time. So this stuff happens more often than we'd think. And now, again, 73 million accounts, while admittedly former customers, the large bulk of them, that 7.6 million number, that's not nothing. And so a good idea, if you are a former or current AT&T customer, make those phone calls, check to make sure your information is secure. And again, keep that information close and don't overshare on the internet. It seems like obvious advice, but it's always good every now and then to get a reminder. It is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. Adam Roberts filling in for Libby Collins. Libby will be back next week right here on the program. I teased it going into this scary scenario that had one man saying this to TMJ4 News.
And I'm naming stores as I'm passing by, and he keeps telling me, sir, I don't know where that is. I can't help you. And it's like, look it up, man.
What had MPD saying that to a man after an event at Fiserv Forum? We welcome in on the Tri-County Contracting Hotline TMJ4 News reporter Ryan Jenkins, who's been on this story. And Ryan, let's summarize a little bit for those that don't know. This all happened through the city of Milwaukee after an event at Fiserv Forum on the 22nd, correct?
Yeah, good morning. That's right. It all started actually with, you know, we found this story because someone emailed TMJ4 News and they had a concern. And his name is Hamza Al-Karardi. He lives in Appleton. And he came to Milwaukee, as you mentioned, to go to an event at Fiserv Forum. He took his brother for his birthday to a WWE SmackDown event. He said they had so much fun after the event. They're on their way back to Appleton. And they noticed that someone's driving super erratically around them, cutting through the bike lanes. At first, they kind of thought nothing of it. But his brother mentions to Hamza that the person driving was waving a gun at them. And what's really unique about this is that Hamza drives a Tesla. So that means that there's cameras built into the vehicle, all around the vehicle. And everything at this point is being caught on camera. And you see this person in the video at one point even getting out of the car and banging on Hamza's window with a gun. All of this happening as Hamza's on the phone with 911. He showed me the call log. They were connected for nearly a half hour, and you heard what he had to say about driving through the city and kind of trying to explain where he was, and the dispatcher, Hamza said, was just telling him that they weren't able to locate him.
Scary. It doesn't even begin to describe it. And Al-Karardi says he was followed outside of the city as well, nearly 25 miles out to West Bend. Is that right?
Yeah. So you know, Hamza said that he was trying to kind of stay in Milwaukee and was circling around and around through just one or two intersections, giving police some time to locate him. And he says after 6 or 7 minutes, he was feeling unsafe. Police were not, or the dispatcher rather, was not, you know, updating him on where police were. So he took off to the interstate. And when he got to the interstate, you know, the call was transferred because at that point it becomes multi-jurisdictional. And he was chased by this person, Hamza says, all the way up to West Bend, where Hamza was finally able to exit, get away from this person and flag down a police officer. But Hamza says at that point, you know, it was too late.
So, Ryan, I know you're following this obviously very closely. I'm curious to hear now what comes next, because there's multiple jurisdictions involved in this, and so that means a lot of different phone calls have to be made on your end. Have you heard any response from MPD or any of the other jurisdictions involved?
So on the day that we talked to Hamza, MPD did confirm that they received that call, that they responded, they said, but that they were not able to locate Hamza, and that the call was transferred when he got to a new jurisdiction. And so at this point, there are all kinds of questions that Hamza is hoping that we can help answer. So we're going to use the Wisconsin Open Records Laws to follow up on this case. And, of course, we're requesting the 911 calls. And there's still questions I want to ask about maybe the challenges of multi-jurisdictional responses. I think that there's a question there, what makes that so challenging. I also think that it's interesting that Hamza says that he never heard from police after his call was transferred and after he says no one showed up. So there was never a follow-up, and he is concerned about that. And so I do want to ask police about that as well. And since this story has aired, multiple other people in Milwaukee have reached out saying that they've had very similar experiences. So another question that I've been trying to ask police and will continue to ask Milwaukee police is, what should someone do if they're in this situation? What would police want them to do if the dispatcher is having a hard time locating them while they're driving and being chased through streets? Do you go to one of the police districts, or is there another type of response that, you know, would be helpful for everybody to know in case you end up in this really traumatizing experience?
Absolutely. A lot of ends to this story. I know you're on top of it, and we'll keep following up for the latest developments. TMJ4 News' Ryan Jenkins. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
We're in the home stretch here on our Easter Sunday edition of Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. Adam Roberts filling in for Libby Collins. Libby will be back on the show next week, Sunday. Well, we're heading out first, before we get to the end of things here, to Oregon, where a man is saying he is lucky to be alive after, get this, a random mishap at a convenience store involving a runaway saw blade.
Surveillance video from the convenience store in Eugene, Oregon shows Shane Reimecke walking into the store, and seconds after the door closes, a 4-foot concrete saw blade barrels into the door's wooden frame. The store's owner says the impact so strong it shook the building.
All I heard was like a metal rolling down from the street, and I looked at the camera, it was just wind. And all of a sudden, we heard a loud bang, like it shook literally the whole store.
Contractors were working nearby and say a loose bolt or possible operator error may be to blame for that blade flying off. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
You feel for the guy in this scenario, but I also feel for the person working on the construction site who maybe did have that operator error, you know, just trying to tighten the ping. Whoa, there. Oh, no. Hey. Like, that's absolutely terrifying to think of, a saw blade. I think of watching those old Looney Tunes cartoons. You're strapped to the, I don't know what it is, like the rolling whatever, and you're tied down and you're heading towards the saw blade. You'll never get away with this.
Tied to a log?
Yes, sure. We'll go with tied to a log. That's what I think of when I think of the saw blade nearing impact. Not one rolling down the street and almost impacting and hitting a store so hard it shakes the whole building. Absolutely terrifying, and all thoughts out to that guy. Thankfully, it sounds like there were no injuries in that scenario. It's 9:54 on WTMJ. Adam Roberts filling in for Libby Collins, who you will be hearing, though, coming up in just about an hour. Our WTMJ conversations this week, we're talking with Judy Rakowski. You may recall she was a police and courts reporter for the Boston Globe. Judy covered a lot of stuff during her time at the Globe, stories ranging from the church abuse scandal, also to mobster Whitey Bulger. But the story that captivated her the most was finding out what happened to her family during the Holocaust. Julie talking with our own Libby Collins.
You talked about your cousin Sam. He was a Holocaust survivor. How did he get through that?
First of all, he was a young, healthy male. He was in his late teens, and that helped a lot. He was able to work, whether it was shoveling coal or any kind of factory job. Having that physical resilience to start with was helpful. And he also will say there was luck. Every small gesture could be the difference between life and death. The kinds of things that people put into fiction stories, or you think this can't be true. And also there was the luck. One day he was supposed to go out to work with this crew, and he just got this intuition and didn't go out that day. And everybody else was shipped to Auschwitz. It's just so hard to fathom that your instinct or your whim one day could be the difference between life and death.
Judy Rakowski, former writer, reporter for the Boston Globe, talks with Libby Collins about her family's search for the truth and comparisons to what happened in Israel 2 weeks ago. This today, coming up at 11 a.m. on WTMJ Conversations, right here on WTMJ. It's 9:56. Adam Roberts, just about done here for Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News. Before we go, I did want to make sure that everyone who is observing Easter, as many are in Southeast Wisconsin, receives the message of blessing. I know a lot of listeners very appreciative over the years of Archbishop Jerome Listecki's annual Easter blessing he gives on the air. Of course, the Archbishop announcing that he will be soon retiring whenever Pope Francis decides that, okay, your time is done. And admittedly, that's a very strange scenario. I'm not sure exactly how long the Archbishop will be still in his position for. But should this be his last one, I did want to make sure that everyone receives a message of blessing on this Easter Sunday, whether or not you observe. It's still a nice message to hear. So we'll wrap that up with this, and then the news is after this on WTMJ.
Through the death and resurrection of your Son, O God, we understand fully the purposefulness of our lives, and it is found in and through your love completed in the person of Jesus Christ. May we be individuals who openly follow that and then follow your lead to love you above all things and our neighbor as self. And at this Easter, as we embrace his life and through his life, a life yet to come, we ask God's blessings upon all listeners in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.